Fires deep, middle of the field, intercepted. An incredible pick by Patrick Peterson.
Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by the Arizona Cardinals mobile app. Visit azcardinals.com/app.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Oh, David Johnson, baby! A hop, a skip, a jump.
He is a freak. There's no doubt.
Rise up and make a play.
He's hit by Chandler Jones and sacked.
You've got to be kidding me.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Darren Urban.
Well, here we are. The last edition of Cardinals Underground here at Cards Camp. Kyle Odegaard here with me, Darren Urban. And it's bittersweet, Kyle. No, it's not bittersweet. It's not bittersweet at all. We all ready to get out of here. It's been way too long of a camp because of the Hall of Fame game. You start early, and, you know, when you start seeing teams that went to camp a week later than you or more than a week later than you breaking a week before you, it's really quite heartbreaking, quite frankly.
That was the worst part. I think it was the Panthers. I feel like the Panthers were at camp for like 3 days and they were already done. So we'll be glad to wrap it up, get back to Tempe, and then that means the season's close.
It is close, and it's really been remarkable. You know, Bruce Arians was talking about camping too long. This is the reality that the Cardinals face is the heat, and that's just how it's been. And actually, couple times over the weekend when I was out and about, I was thinking to myself, man, it's really brutal out here. I kept thinking it was going to be the lower hundreds, but you get just a little bit of humidity, not a lot, not East Coast humidity, not Southern humidity, but humidity for here. And then you throw in when it's 105, and it's just completely miserable. And that's what the Cardinals face when you're in training camp. Now that you're not cutting to 90 guys until after the final preseason game, you've got 90 guys you got to practice with the whole way. And yes, the Cardinals have a bubble at their Tempe facility, but that's realistically, it just doesn't work to have 90 guys in that bubble and all the coaches. And that's a big reason why they're here this extra week, is it's bad enough they're going to have a couple practices before their final preseason game back at the facility with that many people. But to have it in a giant stadium, it makes a lot of sense to stay here.
And they do have all the amenities at University of Phoenix Stadium. They got the weight room and the nice field, and the hotel's close. So it is an easy setup. It's long and it gets tedious. But the fact that, you know, you have a nice field, and you think of going up north where sometimes the field isn't as nice. And I covered ASU. I never went up there with the Cardinals, but they were always worried about sprained ankles at Camp Tonizona because the field wasn't great. So here it's a really nice setup. And the fact that it's long, yeah, but you still get a lot of work done, and they're doing what they need to do.
To be fair, the fields in NEU were always awesome. Somehow they had incredible drainage. It would pour for like an hour in between practices up there, and somehow the fields were fine in the afternoon. So the fields were great up there. Logistically, driving all the way, all that stuff up there all the time was a pain in the butt, and that was a big thing that you don't have here. But the amenities are good. The hotel is nicer than the dorms they ever stayed in. Still, it's not your own bed for a long time, and it does get to be a drag. And so this week, prepping for the fourth preseason game for the Cardinals, but they're treating it as the third. Again, that initial game wasn't even in the mindset in terms of how they structured things here for the Cardinals. So this is still kind of like treated as the third preseason game. This is what is going to be how it is in the regular season in terms of Bruce Arians is calling the plays, and the starters are going to play the longest that they'll play through the whole preseason. And then practice this week is treated differently. These will be the kinds of practices that they have in the regular season. It's not normal training camp practices anymore, per se.
Yeah, and they're going to game plan and see what Atlanta does. And it's a great third preseason game because you're playing a Falcons team that made it to the Super Bowl. They have an offense that is just fantastic, and they changed offensive coordinators, but they have all the guys back that did it last year. So a great test for the defense. And on the flip side, the Atlanta defense got better. So for the offensive guys, it'll be a good test. David Johnson and Larry Fitzgerald probably aren't going to play as much as the rest of the guys. But I think for the passing game, which has had some hiccups in camp, I think it's important for them to come out, try to have a nice rhythm. Carson Palmer wants to get ready to go for the season. So it's not going to be at the same level of a regular season game, but the fact that it is kind of a dress rehearsal against a really good opponent, I think will help. And then you look forward, and now you're only a couple weeks away until the season starts.
It is kind of incredible. You don't, you know, and again, I'm taking it somewhat from our perspective, and definitely first world problems here when you talk about, you know,
Chick-fil-A?
No Chick-fil-A? I was going to say Chick-fil-A, but nobody cares about how we feel about certain stuff. But you'd rather not have a preseason game all the way across the country.
Yeah.
Because it's a preseason game and it's all the way across the country. But it is kind of cool that this will be the very first event in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Well, I say it's going to be cool. I hope it's cool. Anytime you open a new building, there's inevitably bugs here and there in terms of having to work out certain things. And so to be the first event, you know, you kind of raise your eyebrow a little bit about that. But to open a new building, it is kind of exciting. And that is something to look forward to on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, we've hit a lot of stadiums that are newer in Dallas and Minnesota and all these places that are so state of the art, and they've got cool amenities. So definitely should be fun. Go down there and watch the game, but also see what the new stadium's like.
You're not getting any. You weren't planning on getting any Chick-fil-A, were you?
I mean, it's Saturday, so I might.
Well, I'm not saying you can't, but...
Yeah, I might swing down there. I feel like I should since they're closed every other game in the regular season. Just for, like, the principle of the matter, I should go get some to support them.
Carlos Dansby would agree. Speaking of Carlos Dansby, the one thing that, you know, and coming off the preseason game against the Bears, I don't think anything tremendously stood out. I know Steve Keim was talking on Arizona Sports about lack of intensity, and you would like to see that gear up. And again, that goes back to, for this game being the quote-unquote most important game of the preseason, I do think that'll change this week. The other thing that kind of catches the eye at this point is the inside linebacker situation. I mean, at one brief moment in the offseason, you had Carlos Dansby, you had the number one pick, Hassan Reddick, you had Deion Buchanan, who looked like he was going to be coming back from his ankle thing, and then there was a possibility of having Darrell Washington, and all of a sudden you're thinking, wow, that's a pretty impressive inside linebacker group. Well, you know, the Darrell Washington thing didn't work. Deion Buchanan turned out needed to have surgery, so he's had a setback in terms of when he's going to come back, and he's still, you know, not practicing. Hassan Reddick is clearly going through a lot of ups and downs as a rookie, and Carlos Dansby's missed a good chunk of practices because of a leg issue. Now, he's back, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of concern there, but you saw it against the Bears, not having guys at inside linebacker. They had Hassan Reddick and Scooby Wright, and that just was not a pairing that worked out very well. It's a little bit of a concern, even though Carlos might be in there, in terms of how this might impact the beginning of the season.
Yeah, that spot is one of the most important defensively, because a guy like Carlos takes that role of Kevin Minter and Larry Foote before him, which Carlos also had before that, but really getting everybody ready.
Carlos
defensively.
Is old.
Yeah, setting up the defensive line, telling them where to go, and you'll see it in games where the defensive line all hops over, you know, a yard or so right before the snap to try to get aligned. And in this game, Bruce Arians and Marcus Golden both brought it up that a few times they were in the wrong spots. And that's because Scooby Wright's trying to do it. He was a guy that was playing on the outside in college. He doesn't have a lot of experience at inside linebacker. Hassan Reddick is just worried about himself. He doesn't know where those guys are supposed to be. So having a guy like Carlos, who is toward the end of his career, but he's so smart, he can line everybody up. And some of it was missed tackles, but some of it was just them not being in the right spot before the snap, which you can't have. When you're already at a disadvantage before the snap even starts, it's really going to hurt you defensively. So, yeah, if Dansby can be healthy, then you can probably live with Hassan Reddick in the other spot until Buchanan gets back. But if you don't have Dansby or Buchanan, yeah, you're definitely in trouble.
It'll be interesting to see how this defense handles the Falcons. You mentioned earlier about how explosive they are. Offensively, you know, again, it's still a preseason game, but a real test here for Justin Bethel is the number two cornerback. Test to see how those inside linebackers respond. Even Bruce Arians was saying he was a little disappointed how the outside linebackers played in terms of trying to do too much and not doing what they were supposed to do on certain plays, and that's why the runs kind of were able to get outside sometimes. So, you know, there's got to be better discipline. You know, I think there's still questions offensively where this team is and how effective they're going to be right out of the box. You want this defense to be ready. And this is going to be their last dress rehearsal because, let's face it, anybody who means much is probably not going to play in that final preseason game.
Yeah, I think just the team speed will be interesting to watch because you think back to the Atlanta game last year and guys like Taylor Gabriel and Devontae Freeman and Julio Jones, those are great players, but you could tell the Cardinals weren't at the same level of those guys. And that Atlanta offense was dominating. They got in a great groove, and you saw it in the playoffs where they were just mowing everybody down. So it wasn't just the Cardinals, but the fact that they're running those screens and getting big plays. The Cardinals, I think, are faster in a lot of spots this year, especially with a guy like Reddick on the field and a healthy Tyrann Mathieu, and then Tyvon Branch looks healthy again. So I'm interested to see how those guys do in these matchups against a lot of elite athletes for the Falcons.
So here we are in the last week of camp. We're celebrating quietly our getting the heck out of here. But now that it's been a month or 5 weeks or whatever it is, 2 years, whatever, however long we've been here, just from your perspective, what are a couple things that you feel like this team has learned in training camp?
I think one of the main ones is the fact that Robert Kimdichie is somebody that you probably will be able to count on this season, when that was the hope going into training camp, but you were still kind of wondering. But he's done well in practice every day. He's shown it in games. He's gotten that push. He doesn't have a sack yet, but he's been disruptive. And I think you really needed him to step up with Calais Campbell gone. And that's a big one. And I also think Tyrann Mathieu is back. He's healthy. He's making plays all the time. So I think you can count on him as long as he doesn't get hurt again. Having two ACL tears is kind of a scary thing, and you wonder if a guy is going to be hampered later in his career if it doesn't heal right or if things are just going to plague him. But he looks back to normal, and hopefully he can just stay that way. Because if he does, I mean, we see it every single day, and he showed it against Chicago. He's an all-pro when he's healthy, and that's a huge boost for the defense.
I think the couple things that pop into my head, I think Blaine Gabbert has proven he deserves a roster spot. You know, there's still so many questions about the future of quarterback and that kind of thing, and I understand that part. I think Drew Stanton is your number two. I don't think anything is going to change with that. I mean, stranger things have happened. And after this game, sometime next week, I'll probably do a guesstimate on my 53-man roster. And you start doing some of those things and you have some of these guys at the end of the roster, which in this case would include Blaine Gabbert, and you start thinking to yourself, I'm guessing I'm probably over 53 in my head. I got to figure out who would be the tough cuts on some of this stuff, you know. But I think Blaine Gabbert's done enough. Again, if Carson Palmer isn't your guy this year, you're going to be in trouble. We all know that. But with the uncertainty of quarterback next year, I think you absolutely have to consider your options. And I think having Blaine Gabbert possibly being around, and I know he's a free agent after this year, but you can do some things there. I think he's earned that spot. And then going over on the same side of the ball, the receivers thing, I think, unfortunately, what we've learned is there's still a lot of uncertainty about wide receiver. If everybody's healthy and, you know, John Brown is slowly coming back, and, again, he's starting to show some things again in practice where I'm like, okay, if he's there, he looks pretty good, but he's got to be there. And I think Jerron Brown has been a surprise in camp in terms of how quickly he was being able to come back from his ACL, but – you know, you need the consistency from that receiving core that you just have not gotten. You did not get last year, and I think it really undercut them. And I think if you don't have to have 2015 level play from that group because David Johnson is so good now, but you got to get close to it to really be effective. And it'll be interesting to see if that can happen.
Yeah, I think at this point it's hard to consider a scenario where you do get back to that level, because you don't have John Brown, who's completely healthy. Michael Floyd played well that year, and they had a lot of things that went well. Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald are 2 years older now and towards the back of their careers. So I don't think you can realistically get there. But like you said, if you're an above average passing team, you've got David Johnson running the ball. He's a star. I think the defense will be better than people think. So you can kind of put it together and still figure out a way to make a playoff run. But with Brown's injury history and you wonder about being a slow healer, you know, even if he gets healthy here, have a hamstring or something pops up that might keep a regular guy out one game, and for him it's three, that's a pretty big deal. So that's definitely the biggest question to me is the wide receivers going into the year.
I'm trying to think. The inside linebackers we talked about, you know, Bruce Arians has said a couple times that he thinks there's a spot for Scooby Wright on this team because of special teams. It'll be interesting to see what they do. Do they keep five inside linebackers? Because I think Josh Bynes has done a pretty nice job, and obviously you got Reddick and you got Dansby and you got Buchanan. Now, do you see Reddick as a swing guy for inside outside, and so that can be seen that way? Possibly. And then you keep what, three other outside guys? I don't know how that would work. So it'll be interesting to see how all that goes. Some of the, you know, again, the choices, you mentioned Tyvon Branch earlier. He's impressed me. And I thought coming into the offseason, he might be on the bubble. And I don't think that anymore. And you start thinking, are they going to have five safeties now? I mean, what do you do with Rudy Ford?
Mm-hmm.
Even Ironhead Gallen has shown some things. And again, when you start doing the numbers, it's harder. On the offensive line, I think you and I both agree, it looks like Cole Toner and John Wetzel are your two guys that are going to be active on game day. So are you keep the two draft picks, Holden and Dorian Johnson, and quote-unquote redshirt them? That's nine offensive linemen. Now, you're probably going to have fewer defensive linemen this year. So maybe that flips from defensive line to offensive line in terms of the future. But these are some of the hard choices that are coming up.
Yeah, I think clearly Dorian Johnson will be on the team because he's such a high pick. Will Holden probably on that bubble, but if you see some stuff that you like, then yeah, you do keep him. But that's where you get down to which guys are going to be special teams contributors. Would you keep a six wide receiver? And that's where Scooby Wright and Britton Golden and Ulrich John or Will Holden, all these guys are kind of battling for maybe one or two spots. All those guys on the bubble, the fourth tight end, whether it's Hakeem Vallis or Ricky Seals-Jones. And that's when Arians doesn't look necessarily at position groups, but more who the best player is among them. So Scooby's an interesting one because, like you said, Josh Bynes has shown a lot. And with the inexperience of Reddick, I think it would be nice to have Josh Bynes as kind of that emergency guy to fit in there. If Reddick's just not getting it early and Buchanan's still hurt, you need to have somebody that can play the position. So I think Bynes has made his way, you know, past the bubble and more likely to make the team. And Scooby, I think, is right on it. And it'll be interesting. Rudy Ford, too. I think he's versatile enough where he could be that ninth defensive back, whether it's slot corner or safety. But he's another guy, like you said, that you're going to have to figure out. There's going to be some tough cuts to make, and all those guys are sitting on the bubble.
There's always some tough cuts to make. That's clear. So as we come down the stretch here on Cardinals Underground on azcardinals.com, going to get into a little bit of a subject that unfortunately you weren't around for, Kyle, so I don't want to be monologuing too much. At some point, I'm going to reach over and ask Jim O'Mahundro, our fine producer, to chime in here too, because he was around. But obviously, Anquan Boldin retired this week, and he hasn't been a Cardinal for 7 years, but the imprint that he left on the organization and the imprint he left on the fan base, I mean, he's been gone 7 years, and there's tons of fans who still love Anquan. Heck, I even got a tweet. I even got a tweet today. Somebody asking, what are the chances of Anquan unretiring and then signing with the Cardinals? Which kind of made me roll my eyes because it's like he was a free agent up until a month ago. I mean, they had no interest in signing him then. Why would they all of a sudden sign him now? There's just so many reasons. And Anquan was a great player, obviously not quite to where he was anymore. But he's retired. He's moving on to, quite frankly, bigger and better things, helping this country in terms of where we are. And I'm going to leave most of my thoughts out of that. But I think this country needs somebody like Anquan Boldin and as many people as they can doing stuff. But football-wise, I think – you can't measure, and he had, what, 4,000-yard seasons with the Cardinals, something like that. You can't measure what Anquan Boldin did just by numbers, and he had some pretty good numbers. But what he brought to the locker room, what he brought to the field in terms of intensity and passion, and that's stuff you can't – there's no way you can write down exactly what it meant, yet – I think that was his biggest gift to whatever team he was on, and that's really what I remember. I mean, I remember a couple of specific things, but Ohms, is there any particular thing or time or anything about Anquan that really? And you obviously had a unique relationship with him because he did the Big Red Rage for a little bit, and you were around for his whole career. You know, what comes to mind when I say Anquan Boldin and the Cardinals?
Well, I think everyone knows the on the field things that he displayed and his toughness. He would just run over people and stand over them and let them know about it, and just how he dominated games sometimes and made good players look ordinary. But off the field, some of the things that I'll never forget are the Big Red Rage. He would stay after for about an hour and a half. Just he'd have dinner with fans, literally sit at their table and have a meal with them, and he was very friendly with the fans, appreciated the fans. I just remember one time it was over at the old Jilly's American Grill, and it was him and Emmett Smith and just, you know, 50 fans. I mean,
back in the good old days.
There's one Hall of Famer in already, and you can argue that Anquan could be in the Hall of Fame down the road too, but I just look back and think of that, like, okay, there's 50 people here and two very, very excellent football players. But probably, you know, the Q-tip, his segment every Wednesday, it was basically, we could have renamed that show Clown on Your Teammate.
Yeah, that's true.
He would basically come in Wednesday and just go rip his teammates to shreds on camera. And those were always fun memories. But one that I just thought of that stuck out to me is when we went down to Mexico City in 05 to play the San Francisco 49ers. We arrived at the hotel, and the hotel was kind of in a horseshoe shape.
Yes.
And we're up about, I don't know, 8 or 9 floors, and we looked down and,
oh my God, are you going to tell this story?
Well, maybe, yeah. There was a couple in
yes,
the pool,
you are
and it looked like
the
they were wrestling, but they weren't wrestling, yes. If you know what I mean. And just the
thank
howl,
God the guy had a bathrobe on in the pool.
Yeah, the howl of laughter that came from Anquan, which was well known throughout the building. He did not laugh quietly.
He
laughed out loud, so he was the original LOL. So that always will stick with me. And of course, he had a touchdown that game, and you know, just memories like that. It's not the obvious memories;
right.
It's the little subtle things here and there. And what a great guy! Plus, his enormous meat hooks of hands. When you shake his hands, no wonder he didn't drop many passes.
I will say that I have similar memories, and obviously, things did not end well between the team and Anquan, which is too bad because I don't think anybody likes seeing that. You know, I remember. And I hope this doesn't come across as too much of a humble brag thing, but, you know, I covered this team for a newspaper for 7 seasons, including the first few of Anquan's career. I drafted in 2003. And in 2007, my first day working for the team was report day of training camp 2007. And, you know, guys stream in on that day, and it's kind of haphazard in terms of who you see. But then the next day, before the run test, the whole team was out there stretching. I know, Kyle, you don't even remember those days because stretching, what's that, you say, because Bruce Arians doesn't do it. But, yes, this team used to stretch.
When a Doberman has a gun, you have to stretch? I still don't even understand
that.
You have to always be stretching. Because
still one of BA's better quotes.
If a Doberman has a pistol, I don't know. I was lost during all that.
But the next day they were stretching before the run test. And so there's – no public was brought out there that day, but the media was all out there, and, you know, you got whatever it is. Well, in those days, it was 80 guys getting ready for this run test and stretching, and all of a sudden, in the middle of whatever is deep knee bends or whatever, I hear Anquan start bellowing my name, Darren Urban, welcome to the team, and all this stuff, and, you know, and it was quiet out there otherwise, other than maybe John Lott telling him what the next exercise was, and that meant a lot to me that, you know, he would make the effort to recognize that I was starting this new job with the team. And, you know, I think he even said something like, welcome to the team or something like that. And, you know, I think that guy, some of the quick memories that I have you know, some of them were football related. That first game he played in Detroit, I'll never forget. I sat with Jerry Sullivan, he was the offensive coordinator in Anquan's rookie season, and we sat down like the Friday practice before the regular season game, and they didn't throw to Anquan at all in the preseason. He had like 4 catches. He barely played, but everybody was wondering if this guy could do it because he was a converted quarterback and he was super slow and all this in the combine. And I remember Jerry Sullivan telling me, he goes, Darren, he goes, I'm telling you right now, he goes, he's going to be one of the best receivers in the league, and he's going to be one of the best receivers in the league this year. And he goes, we just didn't want anybody to know that. He goes, trust me, on Sunday, you'll see that. And he goes out that first game, and he has 10 catches for 217 yards. And yes, he muffed a punt, and it helped cause the Cardinals to lose the game. And Anquan was angry about that, and he didn't care about any of his catches because he muffed the punt. He was pissed at himself, but that was when you saw the glimpse in that whole rookie year. And 2003 was not a good year for the Cardinals, and Dave McGinnis got fired, and it was ugly, but the bright spot was Anquan through the whole way. And then you got to training camp the next year with Denny Green in his first year, and Anquan hurt his knee early in camp, and he was going to miss like the first 6 weeks of the season or four games or something like that. And I just remember, and again, I'm covering the team for a newspaper. I'm not even working for the team at that point. And I remember my stomach dropping because I'm like, that was a guy that made it interesting to cover. That was the guy that you like seeing perform. And when he was out, it was like, ugh. And those are some of the things that I remember.
Yeah, and just to wrap this up on Anquan, I think the greatest description of how good of a player he was that I can think of is, I've long said, he is one of the toughest players to play the game of football that I've ever seen. And the fact that he's a wide receiver should tell you everything you need to know if you have that description attached to him. So it was just, I mean, he was like a defender playing offense.
It was impressive to watch him for those 7 years. I wish it would have been longer. I'm sure a lot of Cardinals fans wish that too. But to the present, Anquan's retired. We're well past Anquan being here. Now we're to the 2017 season. Finally, training camp is over, Kyle. You can breathe your sigh of relief. And don't forget, we're only a couple weeks away from putting on ties again, so we got that going for us. For Kyle Odegaard, I'm Darren Urban. This has been Cardinals Underground on azcardinals.com.